Welcome to Aim for Truth. I'm your host, Douglas Gabriel, and today I'm very excited because I have a podcast with an old friend who I haven't seen in so long, and his name is John Root, Jr. And Jr. is significant here because I knew John Root, Sr. As a matter of fact, his father was one of my teachers, someone I admired greatly and respected. So I'm really looking forward to what we're going to discuss today, which is the United States Republic. So welcome to the show, John.
So thank you, Douglas. You know, I've been very excited to have discovered Aim for Truth and just recently Our Spirit as well. And I've read an awful lot of what you've put up, and I very, very much appreciate that you're one of the very few people who understands the role of the crown. So the crown is basically the law firm and the bankers. So this idea that there's somehow some shadowy group somewhere that you can't know anything about, you've shattered that. You've gone into the details of all the people who are up front in the hierarchy. Now, of course, we don't know exactly who the bankers are, but what we're going to be talking about today is why it is that the bankers are the actual sovereign. But throughout history, it is always the sovereign who issues the currency. So if at any time in history you want to know who the sovereign is, then you look for who is issuing the money. And what is obvious, or what might be obvious if one were to look, is that we may think that the Congress or the president or what have you are the sovereign. But since they're not issuing the money, Congress is not issuing the money. Congress is borrowing the money from the Fed. So the Fed must be the sovereign, because they are who is issuing the money. This is the primary insight. The main insight is the sovereign always issues the currency.
You know, this concept is so close to Tyle and my heart. It is an issue that we have discussed many times, but you have a perspective which is very, very unique. Now, I just want to mention that we said the word anthroposophist, I think, when we were in the pre-show. And I just want to mention that you, myself, your father, and many others study Rudolf Steiner, who gives us some great insight into some of these things. But what I really like, United States of America Republic, spelled with a CK at the end, as you pointed out, is the original way that it was spelled, is that you don't use anthroposophic jargon, and you don't hide behind Rudolf Steiner. You just speak absolutely clear terms. And what you're saying is, Eve, with a huge problem with our currency, that the odious debt owed to the U.S. Federal Reserve is odious. We don't owe it. We should simply go bankrupt on it. And the people who own the Fed, they try to make it look like Americans own the Fed, where it's controlled by the Congress. No, the principal owners are the bankers who founded it in 1913, and they still go on. And as you say, it's hard to name some of them, basically corporate dynasties, banking dynasties. And so, John, the beauty of what you have, and you have numerous websites that you're connected with, some that you run, organizations that you're connected with, are actually taking, don't know if I'd call it political action, but you're taking action to try to reestablish public as it was originally intended. Fortunately, people have no idea what the republic even means, and they don't know the difference between a Republican and a Democrat. And I would like to characterize Democrats as mob rule, because in the old days, if the Democrats, they'd get together, whoever yelled the loudest, that's who won the vote, and that's what you went with. That's what still goes on today. Whoever yells the loudest in the Democrat Party is the one who gets attention. But of course, we have a uniparty, so I'm not just saying it's just the Democrats. It's both the Republicans and the Democrats who have this allegiance to the International Chamber of Commerce and all the political machinations, which are basically ways for banker corporate interests to control our own political scene. So tell us, first off, who was it? Was it Benjamin Franklin who said, it's a republic as long as you can keep it?
Yeah, right.
Do we have a republic? Have we kept it? Have we been overthrown? Is this the end of our civilization?
Right. So the idea of the Declaration of Independence was that we have certain unalienable or unalienable rights. And those rights are, on the one hand, they're unenumerated. That's what the 10th Amendment of the Bill of Rights is about. All the rights, all the unenumerated rights are reserved to the states, the nation states, or the people. The idea of the republic is that if the sovereign issues the currency, and the sovereign issues the currency in order to create the conditions in which the people live. And the reason is very simple. What you can get money for is the target then of the civilization. So without going into all the things that the bankers have done to create this civilization, which we all don't like and recognize as counterproductive and counter to our actual nature, but we all accept it because the target of the monetary system is to have enough money to live. So if you look at the Declaration of Independence, it characterizes the human condition that we need to recognize, that we need to dissolve the political bands that have connected us to Britain, and we need to recognize that we have certain unalienable or unalienable rights. And among those rights are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the way that Abraham Lincoln characterized the promise of the founding documents in the Declaration of Independence was to say that the conflict between the northern and the southern states, the Civil War, was about whether or not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people would perish or would persist. Now, that ideal that we would be able to govern ourselves is what the revolution was all about. The revolution was about passing the sovereignty from the king, who everybody recognized as ruling by divine authority, and we can get into that at some point, what that actually means. But it was to pass the sovereignty from the king to the people. And the reason that the colonists experienced themselves as able to do that is that there was never enough British gold and silver coins or Spanish pieces of eight or coinage of any sort in order for the people to do their commerce. So from about late 1720s through about 1760, each of the colonists issued their own paper money. And that was based on Benjamin Franklin's paper on the utility and necessity of a paper currency, which he published in around 1730, and described why it was that we needed to issue the currency on paper. Normal history says that Benjamin Franklin wanted that because he got to print the currency. That's completely absurd, and he wasn't the only one who got to print the currency. The idea being that if money is scarce or hard to come by, then all manner of human potential can't be realized. But if money is always being issued, as Benjamin Franklin said, to make the passing of the goods from the producer to the consumer seamless, easy, perfectly natural, then all of our human potential can be realized. So from about 1730 into around 1760, the American colonies grew their economy to a point where it rivaled the English economy. So what was the experience that the colonists had that allowed them to say, we can be the sovereign, rather than the succumbing to the sovereignty of the king. It was issuing the currency, issuing the money in proper proportion so that the goods pass easily from the producer to the consumer, as Benjamin Franklin said. So when the Bank of England bankers got wind of this, actually because Benjamin Franklin went to England and told them what he was doing or what the colonies were doing, the bankers got the king and parliament to pass legislation to restrict the issue of paper currency or colonial scrip. And Benjamin Franklin describes that as the primary cause of the American Revolution. When the banning of colonial scrip began to take effect, the money supply was cut in by more than half. And so what they had not experienced for 30 years, a whole generation, was recession and depression and foreclosures and not enough money. And it was that experience that allowed the colonists to say, or at least the leaders in the colonies, to say, we deserve to be the sovereign, and we will pledge our lives and our sacred honor in order to accomplish that. So that's sort of the background to where this Declaration of Independence comes from and what it promises us. So if you recognize what I've been describing, namely that the conditions in which we live are a result of what the money is issued for, right? How the money is issued. Then you can see that if we, the people, want to be the sovereign, that's what we'll have to learn how to do. We will have to learn how to issue money and how to regulate the money supply so that there's always the right amount of money, not too much, not too little, in circulation to facilitate our entire potential, to facilitate the exchange of all the available goods and services, and to provide the credit to create all the new things that we want. So if you take the Declaration of Independence seriously and you say we have a right to life, to liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then if we want to secure our right to life, everybody needs to get a check at the beginning of the month so that they have the money to live. If you get a check, I get a check from Social Security and from pension, etc., at the beginning of the month, I am free to do whatever I want. I am at liberty to pursue happiness. What makes you happy? There's really only one thing that makes you happy. And that is recognizing and being in a position to pursue your life's calling, your life's purpose. Recognizing and pursuing your life's purpose. That experience of knowing who you are and why you're here, as Mark Twain once said, there are two important days in your life, the day that you were born and the day that you discover why. It's like, oh yeah, right, this is why I'm here. I need to do this. I am going to do this. I don't care whether I have enough money to do it. I don't care whether I'm going to make sure that I am able to do this. Now I'm happy. And Douglas and Tyler and just about everybody who's listening to this knows this to be true. True happiness is a result of recognizing who you are and being in a position to bring your interests, your talents, your capacities to bear on creating the better world, the more beautiful world, the more wonderful world that all of us know in our hearts is possible. So that's what the Republic is about. The Republic is an effort to revendicate. In other words, to reclaim something that was lost or stolen from us by the bankers, something that is inherently ours, that is a result of nature's God, which is a result of common law, which is a result of our natural nature as spiritual beings having a human experience.
Well, I love what you said about sovereignty, so I just want to underscore that. Our sovereignty in America, our sovereignty is not held by the three branches of our government, the federal government particularly. And that's what most people think. And they think that they are in a democracy and that their voice is when they vote and that they're actually making their voice heard when they vote. No, they're voting for representatives to go to represent them in their state capital or in Washington, D.C. And then it becomes as oppressive as it is, because what you're describing here with fiat currency, we now have happening through the U.S. Fed Reserve. What we're seeing here is that sovereignty is being supplanted through currency. And people might not understand that. They understand how powerful currency is, but that currency is a representation of human willpower. In other words, the work that you do.
Yeah.
In other words, you can't put it in a bank and make interest off of it. You can't loan it to other people and then charge interest. You simply have to let it flow as a representation of what your work was. And your work has to flow into the community to, say, you know, bring good to everyone around you as you live out your own heart's desire, your own purpose in life. And that's the liberty, I think, that's being talked about, that we have to have that liberty to be able to do that. But when the currency is tied to fiat paper money and we have $25 trillion debt, odious debt, a debt that can never be paid, it was set up that way from the beginning. And I want you to please address the two first national banks and then the 1913 event of the U.S. Fed, because that's when really it became cast in stone, a couple experiments. But by the third, they got it the way that the British and the bankers had learned from the Vatican and the Italian bankers, the German bankers, the Dutch bankers who came to England. They have a very long plan, and that plan is to control the movement of money, of currency, of assets, to the laws that rule what's a crime to do what they're doing. And they have been very good at basically disguising what they do underneath the guise of law. So when we're talking about sovereignty, it doesn't reside with the president, the Congress, or the Supreme Court. The sovereignty resides with us. And when we just recently had an election that showed that we no longer very clearly have legal elections, then think back. We haven't had legal elections for a long time. That's how the people have stayed in office for 40 years in D.C. That's how they keep their power base when, in fact, they're doing a horrible job. So we must rise up as the sovereign people and say, not just through voting, but through recall, through action, through citizen grand juries, through a lot of avenues that you put forward in your ideology that you represent on your sites and in some of your writings. I think it's brilliant because it comes back to non-centralization. It comes back to be the people. It comes back to working locally. It comes back to creating a currency that is more directly related to the sacredness of the human willpower.
Right. So the most important thing to understand from at least one point of view is that our rights are inherent in our human nature. It's why we say God's law. It's why we say nature's law. It's why we talk about common law. It comes, our rights are inherent in our nature. It's who we are that creates this experience of having inherent rights. They are anterior to government. So we constitute a government in order to create a shield, not a crown. We are creating a shield to protect the rights of the individual. So everything that the government is doing legitimately is staying out of the way, so to speak, until and unless someone does something that's harmful. So the principle of common law is do no harm. If a harm arises, in other words, everybody has a total liberty to do whatever they damn please, as long as it harms no one. As soon as there's a harm, then this community aspect, the what we call the jural assembly, in other words, all the people in a local community, in a ward, or in a town, who've taken on to be responsible for the community. Whether that's a formal process or whether it's a matter of being a voter or whatever, however we end up deciding that, qualified elector is perhaps a good way to think about it. So all those people are then appointing or selecting someone to administer justice. And that takes us to this basic idea that we are providing, if we're going to be sovereign, right, we'll have to learn how to issue money so that we can create the conditions in which we want to live. And we need to be providing the functions of governance to each other. So let's not have a government. Let's not establish a government. Let's have governance. Let's provide the functions of governance to each other. So if the individual is sovereign over his own life, so there are many, many stories from the Holocaust and from the concentration camps in Germany of how people maintained their sovereignty in the face of unbelievably oppressive, you know, near-death experiences. Sovereignty has nothing to do with external liberty. It has to do with something that Rudolf Steiner described in very profound terms and that we in the Republic call the gap. The gap is the fact that your body, your memory, your brain, the world that you're living in, your family, the culture, your friends, your enemies, they all give you experiences. And if you become aware that those experiences are just that, they're experiences, and you can recognize that you get to choose what they mean. You get to choose. This is the nature of sovereignty. This is the essence of our freedom. Our experiences come to us. And if you practice not allowing all the ready-made concepts from the culture to interpret the experience so that you have no opportunity to be who you really are, if you stop and you ask yourself, what idea, what interpretation, what concept will give me the most agency, the most joy, the most satisfaction to understand the experience, then you are in that experience of your true freedom and your sovereignty. So I have a number of websites. One of them is usarepublic.net, and the Republic is spelled with a CK because if you look in the dictionaries of the time of the establishment of the Republic, it is spelled with a CK. And all it does to spell it with a CK is to take you back to 1776 so we know what we're talking about. We are not talking about the American Republic that we have now. We're talking about the promise of the Declaration of Independence, of the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, the Northwest Ordinance, Constitution, how shall I put this? The Constitution that was in effect up until the Civil War. Let's put it that way. There's a lot of history there. Then such things as common law, nature's law, the maxims of law and treaty law. So those are the things that we're referencing. And all of this is described in the website, usarepublic.net. So I think that the most important thing to appreciate or to understand from the effort to recreate the Republic is that if we are to be sovereign, then we will in fact create the conditions together that we want to live in. How will we do that? Well, there are three social technologies that have been developed in the past 20 years in particular, that give us the actual potential to govern ourselves. So from the point of view of governance, there's a social technology, and by social technology, I mean an understanding of human nature that allows us to have an effective social organization. We call it in the Republic dynamic governance. It's known more popularly as sociocracy. And sociocracy is both a way of conducting meetings and it's an organizational structure. And the significance of sociocracy is that it corresponds so accurately to human nature that everybody experiences themselves as heard. And in a sociocratic meeting, everyone is heard. And then there's double linking. Every circle, every group is has autonomy. They're sovereign in their aim, in their domain. And the experience of being able to govern yourself when you have this technology, this sociocracy or dynamic governance, is just exciting. And then there's community-created credit. Because money is always a matter of law or agreement, and law is always an agreement, we can make an agreement that we'll use the dollar as the unit of value, because we all know what a dollar is. Well, we will not use the dollar as the means of exchange. We will use the means of exchange that we issue, that we control, that we can issue for the things that we decide would be good. And at the moment that you are doing that, at the moment that you are issuing the money for what you agree would be good, then of course only the things that you agree would be good get funded. It is that simple. So is it a good idea? Okay, yes, it's a good idea. Are there people who really want to do it? I mean, who would dedicate themselves to do it? Yes, there are. Are they capable? Well, if they're not, they can learn how to be. And they would know that that would be their priority. Is it a good use of the resources, both the built resources and the natural resources? So if we can say, yes, it's a good idea. Yes, there are people who are willing to do it. Yes, they know what they're doing. They'll be able to do it. And it's a good use of the resources. Well, then we'll issue the money for it. We will issue the money to make it possible. There you have, we the people, sovereign, creating the conditions in which we want to live. So we are concerned about science being about truth, art being about beauty, and education and religion being about goodness. We want to create a culture in which we are pursuing truth, creating beauty, and doing the good. Once we're able to do that, then our governance will be all about justice. And everybody has a very, very similar common sense of justice. We know this because it is so easy to recognize injustice. We always recognize what's unjust. Now we get into a big argument about how to remedy the injustice, but you put 12 people together and they have to come up with a unanimous decision and they manage that. Okay, so what is the economy about? The economy is about community. If you think about it, everything in the economy is organized so that people have to cooperate with each other to provide all the goods and services that we need in order to live. But the culture tells us that everybody's competing with each other. We know that's not true. We don't. We're not competing with each other. Sure, there's competition, but it's for the best idea. It's for truth. It's for beauty. It's for goodness. That's where the competition is. Once it's clear, this is beautiful, let's do it. We're all cooperating. So we want a culture in which we are all free to pursue truth, beauty, and goodness. We want a governance that is just. It's a result of our common sense of justice, where we are providing the system, the ways in which we govern ourselves together. And the economy is what? It's about community. It's about solidarity. It's about cooperation. And if we issue the money to properly represent the value of the things that are actually valuable and our potential to create new value, we're sovereign. And when we do that, everybody in the community will be able to say, the community is as it should be because I am doing my utmost to make it so.
We want to thank you, John, because what you brought forth is not just a theoretical ideology, but it is something that you have also lived with. You've lived in people took what you're saying, which sounds kind of pie in the sky, kind of, isn't it great that it could be that way in the future when people are much nicer? But you have actually lived in these communities where everyone pitched in what they had, and then they got together and they communicated what the needs were, and then they shared out the assets. And these communities help especially challenged adults, and they don't even take money from the federal government, though they could in many cases. So you have actually lived these things. So what you're saying is not pie in the sky. This is not some dreamer's ideology. This is, in fact, a very real possibility that can happen. Now, we're going to have to continue our conversation in the future, I think many times discussing some of these topics. But today I want to end this with just this short presentation, because we want to make sure that this gets out to people. And then we are going to continue to have conversations with you if you are willing to do so.
I absolutely feel like I've come home. I just am so delighted to be speaking to you and to Tyler and knowing that I'm understood. It's just a wonderful experience. So yeah, we will carry on.
And in all the stuff that I've read, I agree with everything you say in principle. So that is very rare for me to find anyone that I agree with. So I just want to say that we are kindred souls and that, you know, work out of the same impulses, I think, in a very real way. So I want to thank you today for being on Aim for Truth and helping us with this podcast. And I want to make sure that this gets out to people today. And Tyler is going to make sure that that happens. So we will be speaking with you again in the future. And I want to thank you for your wisdom and insight.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure.
Just so you know, I'm working my way through the Gospel of Sophia, and I am delighted.